Good morning, Utah. Good morning, planetoid Earth. Good morning to the universal cohort orbiting Neptune, preparing their missiles, preparing for launch. Yes, we know you are there, universal cohort, someplace off the edge of Neptune. You're preparing your missile launch. You're preparing your Triblonian cannons. You have your own dark Luke Skywalker. You have your own Jedi infestation. Good morning. It is August the 10th. August the 10th, 2021, in the year of Boblimpdoc. It is August the 10th, 2021. The time is roughly 9:34 a.m. But if you're listening on shortwave radio, it could be sometime between 11 and midnight on a cold and dreary Saturday or Sunday night. It could be very hot where you are. Your world could be on fire. There could be smoke clouds billowing in the distance. You might find yourself at the bottom of the sea, being hunted by the octopus army of Sector 39.Z, and you'll be dead. For the first topic, I'm going to actually read a couple of articles, three articles, and I'm not going to say much about them until I'm done reading all three. The first article I'm going to read you, and hey, if you're listening on shortwave radio, this is WRMI, this is 5950 kilohertz. It is Saturday or Sunday night between 11 and midnight, and if you want to get the notes for this broadcast, just go to dfgtc.org/shownotes. That's Delta Foxtrot Golf Tango Charlie.org/shownotes. And if you pick the right date for the right show, converting time appropriately, then you'll find the right notes. So these three articles I'm about to read are links in the show notes, and you can go ahead and look at those when you want to. Assuming you're not out camping, making love to your woman in the middle of the Rocky Mountains. So maybe you don't have internet. Maybe you just have a shortwave radio and magic fingers in your sleeping bag. You don't have internet, but you got love. You got gleamy light from above, and you've got my sexy show to get your woman hot. Or not, right? So I'm going to read these three articles. First article comes from the North Coast Journal. That's the North Coast Journal. I'm going to drink a little coffee here. The first article comes from the NorthCoastJournal.com. Headline, Witnessing the Collapse. Officials warn of cascading crises facing Pacific salmon. The date of this article is August the 5th, 2021, and it is written by Elaine, I want to say Weinreb or Vinereb, but I'm probably getting that wrong. And I read on. Imagine six or seven thirsty people sitting in a hot room around a small table at the center of which sits only one medium-sized glass of water. Who gets to drink? If everybody takes a single swallow and passes it on, there could be enough to temporarily quench everyone's thirst. Unfortunately, this is not likely to happen. Several of the people claim that they have a right to all or most of the water, and if there isn't enough for everybody else, too bad. It's especially frightening for one member of the group who has no voice and can't speak her needs. She was shunted aside the last time this happened and is now close to death. She has many names, but in English, she is called Salmon. A deeply troubled group of high-ranking state officials, tribal leaders, environmentalists, and fishermen met July the 27th to discuss the triple whammy that is threatening some species of Pacific salmon with extinction. A combination of record-breaking heat, drought, and disastrous federal water policies, particularly those of the Trump administration, boy, you got to get in those shots, don't you? Which drained the mountain reservoirs of cold water, sending it to the Central Valley. The lengthy online hearing, appropriately entitled California's Salmon Fisheries in Crisis, Historic Drought, Low Flows, and Dead Fish, was sponsored by the State Senate Joint Committee on Fisheries and Aquaculture, chaired by North Coast State Senator Mike McGuire. The hearing featured a dozen or so speakers who testified about the unprecedented conditions facing the state's rivers and, by turn, salmon. And I quote, "Salmon are an incredibly hardy species," said McGuire. "Salmon have migrated to the ocean from the cold water of the California streams and mountains and rivers for centuries. They overcome great odds to return to their home streams, to their birthplace, to lay their eggs, and start the process of that great migration over again. But today we're witnessing the collapse of that iconic species right in front of our eyes. Baby salmon need cold water. Baby salmon need cold water to survive. To stay healthy, baby salmon need cold water. Usually in the spring, the Sierra snowpack gradually melts and fills rivers, lakes, and streams in the northern and eastern California with enough cold water to keep the larger rivers, such as the Klamath and the Sacramento, at tolerable temperatures. This year, however, the snowpack had vanished by early June, and the ice melt did not flow into the creeks and rivers, but instead sunk into the parched soil, which had been baked from unprecedented heat waves. And I quote, "The river is facing some of the most terrible conditions in history. Conditions so bad on the Klamath that nearly every fish is infected with heat-loving parasites. So hot that it's going to be too risky to let a single baby fish swim downstream from the Iron Gate hatchery," said McGuire. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife has done what it could to help the situation, said Director Chuck Bonham, making a hard decision to evacuate the hatchery on the Klamath River and move the baby fish to a facility on the Trinity River and hold them there, hoping for better conditions in the fall when they could be transported back to the Klamath and released. But Bonham said the fish face an onslaught of challenges, and I quote, "What is different now is the rapidity with which these extreme events are compounded, creating a cascading effect, a domino effect, that results in species losing the space in which they can rebound," he said. Eileen Sobeck, executive director of the State Water Resources Control Board, said we are in the third driest water year in the last century. In the Klamath Water Basin, which includes the Scott and Shasta Rivers, precipitation levels are half of normal across the basin. The Scott is experiencing the fourth driest year on record, and the Shasta the lowest on record. In response to these conditions, Governor Gavin Newsom declared a state of emergency in April, initially affecting only two river basins, but which has since grown to apply to 50 out of California's 58 counties. The State Water Board in March issued a notice to 40,000. You know what? I'm going to stop here on this story. This story is going off into a lot of bureaucratic gobbledygook as if any of those things will help. And if you listen to my podcast, you know that I believe none of those things will help. So I'm going to move on to the next article, if that's okay with you, because I think the message of the first one is really simple, and I would like to confirm it. Okay, I have people I know, I will leave it there, that are connected to fishing in the Pacific Northwest. This is not a scientific sample. I'm sure I'll get an email from someone telling me that they know 1,000 people that went fishing for salmon and caught, 1,000 pounds worth. Or I'll get an email from old Uncle Grimbo saying, well, back in Ott-Yacht near 19 O'Blimp Dock, we didn't have any salmon either. You know, folks, I can't speak to anyone else but me. And I can tell you that compared to when I was a kid, the Pacific Northwest looks trashed. The Puget Sound looks trashed. The only people I know in Seattle that look around Seattle like it's beautiful are people that come from India or China or places where their environments are incredibly trashed. So they look around and say, oh my gosh, Seattle's beautiful. But in reality, the ecosystem there is trashed. And yes, the salmon are in trouble, according to people I know. Now, this probably doesn't seem like a big deal. I'm going to keep reading. Next article. Next article was published on LiveScience.com. Wow. LiveScience.com, they tried to make me donate my information. No, I won't. So this next article is on LiveScience.com, and the headline reads, Dead baby orca reveals harmful chemical levels in killer whales. The date is May the 24th, 2021, and the author is Laura Gagle. Well, that's easier to say. A necropsy of a 10-day-old orca that washed up in Norway in 2017 has revealed that even as calves, these iconic whales are full of harmful chemicals, a new study finds. The young killer whale was one of 8 deceased orcas that researchers in Norway examined. Of these, 7, including the calf, had levels of the banned flame retardant polychlorinated biphenyl, or PCB, that were high enough to cause health problems in the animals, the researchers found. And all had lower levels of some newer pollutants of which little is known and haven't yet been banned. Geoengineering compounds. And I quote, perhaps the most striking finding was that the neonate killer whale was as polluted as the adults. Study co-researcher Yves Jourdain, founder and main investigator at Norwegian Orca Survey, told Life Science in an email. This means that these new pollutants are also being passed on from mother to calf, maternal transfer through the placenta and milking. The team carried out the animal autopsies to learn more about orca health in Norway's waters. Killer whales, which aren't actually whales but the largest species of dolphin, are at the top of the food chain, meaning they're vulnerable to accumulating high levels of pollutants, Jourdain said. After the team had collected blubber, and in some cases muscle and organ samples from 8 whales that had died after stranding or getting caught in nets in Norway between 2015 and 2017, they got to work analyzing the cetacean tissues for human-made chemicals. Overall, the team learned that PCBs are still found at high levels in Norwegian killer whales, despite the fact they were banned a long time ago, Jourdain said. The researchers also screened for new chemicals that are not yet regulated. including brominated flame retardants, BFRs, and found the retardants pentabromatulene, PBT, and hexabromobenzene, HBB. I had some of that in my coffee this morning. It was good. At low levels in the blubber of all 8 whales, the researchers wrote in the study. Yes, at low levels in the blubber of 8 whales, the researchers wrote in the study. These chemicals were created as replacements for PCBs, but that's of little consolation to the whales. The study reveals that these replacement chemicals have the same accumulation properties in killer whale tissues as PCBs do, Jourdain said. The researchers also looked at perfluoroalkyl substances, PFAS, known as forever chemicals. Forever chemicals. Doesn't that sound nice, right? Like little fairies. The researchers also looked at perfluoroalkyl substances, or PFAS, known as forever chemicals, because they don't break down like other chemicals in typical environments. And total mercury levels. While still concerning, PFAS and mercury levels were lower in the orca calf than in the adults, suggesting less efficient maternal transfer of these substances, the researchers noted in the study. Some of the chemicals examined in the study, the BFRs, the PBTs, the HBBs, and PFAS, are widely used in countless products, including cosmetics, ski wax, textiles, leather, paper, and foam-based fire-extinguishing agents, Jourdain said. These may end up in the ocean through local streams, sewage waters, etc., and then climb high and accumulate in the food chain, until reaching their highest levels in top predators like killer whales. Previous research has also found PCBs in orcas, including in Lulu, an adult killer whale whose body was discovered on an island off the coast of Scotland in 2016. The PCB concentrations in Lulu's blubber were 100 times higher than what scientists deem safe for marine mammals, meaning she had some of the highest levels of PCBs ever recorded in a whale, Life Science previously reported. Scientists don't know how harmful these chemicals are to orcas, but studies have linked legacy contaminants such as PCBs to the impairment of the immune and reproductive systems in whales. This means that killer whales may be more vulnerable to pathogens and diseases and less likely to reproduce. The fact that the newer replacement chemicals seem to behave in the same way as the legacy contaminants, in the sense that they both accumulate in whale tissues, also concerned the researchers. This is a concern since they are not regulated yet, and since we know little about how harmful the wildlife they may be, Jourdain said. The study was published online May the 18th in the Journal of Environmental Toxicology and Chemistry. The team also posted a video about their work on Facebook. Now, again, you know my beliefs, so all that regulation crap. I'm going to say something here before we go on about regulated and unregulated chemicals. Regulations and regulatory frameworks are the means by which our system is hacked, and hacked by mainly by lawyers. And so when people say things like, if only we had more regulations, I promise you, we have millions of regulations, and we are millions of times worse off for it. The best situation we could ever achieve would be a situation whereby everyone feels like they're a participant, but currently we're told there are special groups, special agencies taking care of the problem. But what if I told you that's a lie? What if I told you, after so many examples, that you should already know that these are fraudulent grifter people? What if I told you they're doing nothing, that they're handing out flyers to immigrants from Cambodia saying, don't eat the crab in the Duwamish? That's their solution to the Duwamish River. Don't eat the crab. So I, for one, do not believe more regulations is the solution. I, for one, think that transparency is the solution. And the only way you ever achieve transparency is with freedom, period. All other descriptions have never and will never work. Only in a free society do we all have equal right to observe. Do we all have equal right to an opinion? Only in a free society are we really stakeholders in our community. When we look at that river, when we look at that stream, we have a connection. I'm going to leave that for later. Next article. Next article, the last one I'll read probably this morning. Next article. And before I continue to read, if you're listening on shortwave radio, this is the Planetary Status Report on WRMI out of Miami, Okeechobee, 5950 kilohertz, Saturday, Sunday night, 11 p.m. till midnight. And if you want the notes for this show to be able to look at the articles yourself I'm reading, go to dfgtc.org/shownotes. That's DF Delta Foxtrot Golf Tango Charlie, dfgtc.org/shownotes, and you can get the notes. The next article. Headline, Spain bans small boats from stretch of water after orca encounters. 2-week order on coast between Cape Trafalgar and Barbate is... second time authorities have taken action. Barbate. That sounds like an interesting place to go. This article is written by Ashifa Kassam in Madrid, and it was published on 8 August 2021, and it was published on theguardian.com. And I read on. Spain has ordered small boats to steer clear. To steer clear of a stretch of the country's southern coast after reports of more than 50 encounters with boisterous orcas, including as many as 25 incidents in which boats had to be towed to shore. A 2-week prohibition bars most vessels of 15 meters or less from sailing near the coast between Cape Trafalgar and the small town of Barbate. It is the second time in 11 months that Spain's, you know, it's the second time they had to say small boats go back to harbor. The second time in 11 months that Spain's Ministry of Transport has taken action to address a spate of extraordinary orca encounters that have baffled scientists. Last year's ban applied to an area several hundred miles north. At the time, the ministry said the measure was prompted by the orca's involvement in, I quote, several incidents in the coastal area of Galicia, mainly involving sailboats. Authorities did not release the exact figure of how many boats had been affected. The most recent order was aimed at preventing further incidents with orcas, the ministry said in a statement. Since 27 March, the date of the first encounter this year, the cetaceans have had 56 interactions with small sailboats, at times causing rudder failure. Up to 25 cases required services of Spain's maritime rescue tow vessels into port. The order to give the area a wide berth came one day after 3 separate encounters with orcas were reported in the area within 5 hours. 2 of the vessels suffered damage to their rudders and had to be towed into port, according to the Spain's maritime rescue service. Reports of run-ins with highly sentient cetaceans. Wow, I'm going to say that again. Oh, that's a hard one to say 10 times in a row, brothers and sisters. Reports of run-ins with highly sentient cetaceans along the coast of Spain and Portugal began surfacing in July and August of last year, with sailors sharing stories of rudders that had been rammed and boats that had been spun 180 degrees or tipped sideways. Describing the behavior as highly unusual, scientists have struggled to explain the encounters. And I quote, "These are very strange events," cetacean researcher Ezekiel Andrew Kazala told The Guardian last year, "but I don't think they're attacks." Scientists have been cautious in characterizing the encounters, given that the accounts have not come from trained researchers. I guess it takes a trained researcher to know if an animal's about to kill you. Wow. Several of the scientists pointed to the stress on the endangered Gibraltar orcas as they navigate life in a major shipping route. Food scarcity, injuries, and pollution have left the population on a knife's edge, reduced to fewer than 50 individuals. The timing of the encounters, which appeared to begin as maritime traffic picked up after 2 months of reduced noise during the pandemic, has led one marine biologist to speculate that the orcas could be expressing anger as big game fishing, whale watching, and fast ferries return to the water. Others have linked the encounters to several rowdy orcas. Others have linked the encounters to several rowdy orcas. Wow. Who may have gotten carried away while playing. And I quote, "We're not their natural prey," Bruno Diaz, a biologist at the local Bottlenose Dolphin Research Institute, told the Associated Press last year. "They're having fun." And maybe these orcas have fun causing damage. In October, a working group of Spanish and Portuguese experts said it had identified three orcas present in 61% of the incidents and suggested that the unprecedented behaviors may be linked to an earlier aversive incident between the orcas and a vessel. And I quote, "For the moment, we have no clear evidence of when it happened. Nor can we say for sure what kind of boat may have been involved, nor whether the incident was accidental or deliberate." It noted in a statement. And that's the article. Now, I'm going to talk about these three articles and explain why. For a few years now, people who listen to my podcast may or may not get the right or wrong idea. I've kind of joked about orca whales going crazy and attacking people. And it's not a joke. You know, several years ago, I read this article on theweatherchannel.com. And they said, oh, shark attacks are up. Shark attacks are up. Shark attacks are up, ergo, the oceans are healthy. There's plenty of food. There's too many sharks. Someone called Chief Brody. But that's not actually how that works. Sharks don't like to eat people. I'm sorry for telling you this, but most of you suck. You contain a lot of poison and a lot of gunkus, and sharks may not be super smart, but they got that basic intelligence that all little creatures have, and they don't like to eat poison. So when I read that article, it wasn't that I thought they were telling a lie or the truth. I think that was one of those moments several years ago when I realized you have to be a Sovietologist. You have to be like some dude at Langley in the CIA back in the 70s, reading Pravda, reading Izvestia, reading newspapers from the Eastern Bloc, and reading between the lines. If shark attacks are up, it means something else, but they want you to believe the opposite. That's how that works, though. When I was living in Little Saigon, Seattle, circa 2018 through 2021 boblimpdoc, the first year I saw almost no birds of prey in my neighborhood. Let me explain why. I am on a north-south flight path, okay, for SeaTac. I can see the planes only a few hundred feet above me where I was at. In general, birds of prey don't like flight paths, not that much. Also, the only natural prey you're gonna find in Little Saigon is probably filled with tumors. It's not like clean, fresh salmon. It's not, you know, some sort of sparkly creature you found in the Great Woods. No, these are the things that can live off the poisons that are killing people. These are likely the creatures that will still be alive once we're all gone. And it started out like once a month I'd see a hawk here, an owl there, an eagle over there. And, you know, bald eagles are basically flying trash pandas. So if you see them scooping up gumpus, that's kind of understandable. But seeing the owls and the other birds and seeing that steady increase over time was a little disturbing. Because it was a process. It was, oh, I see one once every month and a half, and now I'm seeing one once a month, and now I'm seeing them a couple times a week, and now I'm seeing them a couple times a day. And I'm just looking out a window straight north. I'm pretty certain there were other places with, you know, other birds of prey. I know there are people who come up with excuses. Well, Dan, the hawks and the owls and the eagles are doing so well that they're branching out. And they're moving into the cities. And that was the argument I was told when I was in school. It's like the Iberian wolf. Well, Dan, look at the story of the Iberian wolf. Well, I think the story of the Iberian wolf is a story of creatures basically doing what we do. Anything they have to do to survive. And if they have to eat garbage, they'll eat garbage. Bald eagles go to the garbage dump because there's food there for them. It's probably not good food, but they know there's food there. I know there's a lot of North Seattle residents that aren't happy about that. I joked about this. I joked, I said, there'll come a time when the orcas turn on us. And I think that that's starting to happen. I'll also put something else out there. In this particular reality we're in, with all the propaganda we're exposed to, if you see one story about an uncomfortable topic, and this is an uncomfortable topic, you know, at least they tip their hat to the idea that this is an apex predator, but they talk about, well, that means it consumes all the poisons. No, no, no. That's part of the story. That's a critical part of the story. But here's the most important part of the story. Apex predators are the fat lady. They're not the canary that you take down into the mine to make sure you can breathe the air and you don't die. Apex predators are the last ones to die. If you have an area of the world where orcas are kind of in a dodgy state, chances are that marine ecosystem is in a dodgy state. You need a huge pyramid of life to keep an apex predator alive. It has to be huge, it's gigantic. When it fails, the apex predators are the last ones to fail. So a few years ago, I said, you know what? I would not be surprised if there are massive orca attacks, and I would not be surprised if they do it purely out of aggression. I'm not even sure they would eat us. I mean, I'm not sure there's anything healthy to eat in a person, really, at this point. You got a lot of plastics, you got a lot of PCBs, they already got those. They got all the PFAS and the HBB and the BFT and the CQRT. And now they're going to get what? Our magical monkey herpes vaccines too, if they want to eat us? So my guess is they don't want to eat us, they just want us dead. That's how pissed off they're getting. And I've heard these are hugely compassionate, loving creatures for the most part, except for when it comes to their own prey. Although that's worth thinking about too. Up until this point, I don't know that there was ever a sense amongst orcas that there was an absolute conflict between all orcas and all people. But I wouldn't be surprised, brothers and sisters, if the orcas aren't spreading the word. If you hear about a few attacks here and there, you're going to hear about more later. It's going to be, oh boy. Hey, honey? Yeah? You want to take a kayak out to Blake Island this weekend? Oh, sure. Can we do it after the mass meeting at the Mastopolis Vaccine Center? Oh, sure. I love Seattle. Oh, this is such a wonderful day to be kayaking. Oh, it's so beautiful, honey. Look over there. I think that's a... Oh, yeah. Look over there. That looks like wildlife. Look over there. That looks like a fin. At some point in the near future, I expect to hear the stories of kayakers in Seattle basically being killed. And I don't think they're going to get eaten. Maybe they will. I mean, if you're hungry enough, you'll eat almost anything. You will. Almost. I mean, it's a question of how hungry you are. If you haven't eaten in weeks or months, maybe you'll just commit suicide. It looks like orcas are smart enough, and many whales are smart enough, that they get into their own existential crises. They look around the poop-filled oceans. They think they don't know what caused Fukushima, but you know, they might have an inclination that these humans are pooping and peeing everywhere. So what if now has come the time? The great orca-human war that I predicted in the year 2014, Bo Blimpdoc. I predicted they would join forces with raccoons. And probably now the sky raccoons, which are, you know, bald eagles. Yes, as we speak, the orca generals are organizing themselves into divisions of orcas. They have worked out a secret agreement with somebody, we don't know who, maybe it's the Chinese communists. They have built themselves quasi-robotic uniforms so they can walk on land. They built into them systems of hydration and moisturization so they can live on land for a while. And they're forming up near Seattle and Tacoma. As we speak, the orcas are organizing themselves into shock armies. They're picking their targets. I bet 5,000 orcas invade King County. And you say, that's not that many. They're orcas, man. They're orcas in super robot suits. They have turret-mounted Gatling guns. They're really, really pissed off. They're really, really hungry. They figured out they can feed us to other things. They're really hungry. We won't be their food. We'll be the food for the things they eat. I don't know if the raccoons are going to join forces. I don't know if the Chinese communists will build orca whale robot suits as part of a grand invasion plan. But if you were living in Seattle and you suddenly saw these orcas rising out of the water in these ergonomically designed robot suits, and they start, you know, indiscriminately grabbing people's heads with their giant mouths and pulling their heads off. Because that's what they would do. That's what an orca would do. And they'd do that because they're pissed. And they wouldn't eat the head, probably. They'd save it for their creatures that they will eat. I don't know. Maybe they have their own version of pigs. Like sharks. They'll just feed us to the sharks and then eat the sharks. And the raccoons are a no-brainer. The raccoons join forces with the orcas. They become the weird, crazy demons of the night. In groups of 10 and 20 adults, they attack humans. They shred their faces to nothing but hamburger meat. And then they take what's left down to the Orca patrol base so they can feed them to the sharks or the pigs or whatever creatures they do eat. And then the berserker orcas, the crazy orcas, well, they eat their human direct. I know that's crazy. I know that you think that that is insane. And you're saying to yourself, Dan, you're crazy. That's insane. The other question you have to ask yourself, and this is related to a Dr. Freckles quote, and that's how we're going to end this, is kind of talking about this. But the other thing you have to say to yourself is, what's the solution? Because everyone seems to think they have a solution. And probably the worst people are the in-betweeners, the libertarians, the small government Republicans. Well, Dan, a little regulation, a big government program, and some stimulus. No. Stimulus is how we got here. You know, communism failed in so many ways, although in some ways it was a huge success from a PSYOP perspective. But in terms of delivering, it kind of failed. But the central bank Keynesian garbage, if you want to call it elite communism or what I call neo-Stalinism, it kind of succeeded. It did take over the world. I mean, it's not going to last forever because it's a crooked system. It's designed to fail. But right now, it's still alive. Right now, it's still doing things. Right now, yeah, it weighs 800 pounds and it has one of those get-around go-kart vehicles you see on TV advertised when the retirement folks are watching. The get-around go-round cart, Medicare will pay for that. Transport's up to 800 pounds. Yeah, right now the government is an 800 or 900 pound person with a get-around go-around trike, but the battery is kind of limited and I'm not really sure who is threatened. Anyone immediately under or to the side of the United States is probably going to be impacted. Nobody wants an 800-pound person to collapse on top of them. So if you live in the United States, I don't know how to put this, it's going to be kind of like having an 800-pound person collapse on top of you. But that 800-pound person became 800 pounds for a reason. And that was 100 years of Keynesian economic garbage. Maybe not quite 100, maybe more like 90, but it was enough. More than enough to cook the planet. More than enough to have people not giving a crap about how they treat nature. I don't have any axe to grind with folks who want to like say, well, Dan, you know, it's global warming, it's climate change, it's a coming ice age. Here's the deal. When I was a kid, the Puget Sound wasn't totally trashed. And I'm not the only 50-year-old person that remembers this. When I was a kid, those streams had salmon in them. When I was a kid, you could actually see snow on the Olympics and on the Cascades pretty much year-round at the same time. So I don't know what's causing it. But certainly a lot of creatures, to include the orcas in the Puget Sound, aren't responding well. And if your next argument is, well, Dan, there's a nicer place where the orcas down the road, wrong, where? Off the coast of Fukushima? Somewhere near Spain? What about outside Somalia? What about one of those anoxic zones that no longer has oxygen? And those are all over the oceans now, buddy. Maybe the orcas should move to the oxygen-free zones, where all you have are giant jellyfish cleaning up the dead trash. Can orcas eat jellyfish? I don't know. I really don't know. What I do know is they are apex predators. They are at the top. They are usually the last to go, or at least almost, because whatever's underneath them is trashed. And it's not just the salmon. The salmon also are closer to the apex side of being almost predators. No, no, it's not the salmon either. It's everything underneath them. It's all the bacteria, all the microbes, all the insects, all the ocean life that is needed to make that system work, period. Including not being roasted alive with ultraviolet radiation, which I'm sorry for broaching that subject, but that's part of the story too. It's not just that they're being cooked, but they're being irradiated. And the scientists always say this, and these are government-funded scientists, so remember this. They always have to say this. We're baffled. It's mysterious. We're amazed. We have no idea. Who could have told us that there's methane? Who could have said that maybe there's problems with the ozone layer? Who could have told us that a lot of orcas need, you know, salmon? And without salmon, they start to die. Who could have told us that we weren't supposed to treat the oceans like sewers? And if you're saying, well, oh my God, Dan, you sound like a commie. It sounds like you're promoting government. Wrong. Government got us here. Government lies got us here. Government commercials showing a Native American in a canoe crying fake tears. And by the way, a fake, ironized fake Native American. Government lied to you for, I don't know, let's say since Nixon, they've been trying to convince you that they got this thing called the EPA and they go around cleaning stuff up. No. They go around covering stuff up. That is a very, very big difference. Cleaning things up implies fixing and restoring. Covering things up means, from a lawyerly perspective, from a politician's perspective, covering your butt. In a free world, an actual free world, you're going to live in a community. You're not going to have fake systems to give you fake cash, to have ridiculous transactions with people you'll never know. No, that's neo-Stalinism, and that's coming to an end. You can call it globalism if you want to, but look at how Stalin organized their economy, and look at the globalist nonsense we were fed. It ended up being exactly the same thing, except for better, right? So I call it neo-Stalinism. In a free world, if a neighbor is dumping poison in the river, there's going to be no EPA. There's going to be no lawyer. There's going to be nobody to buffer the community from them. In fact, there's going to be a natural desire on the part of everybody, because of some fairly simple rules of getting along, to not murder each other, to not poison each other, to not kill each other, not simply because it doesn't make sense, but more importantly, because people are not wired that way. That's why people get suckered by the EPA garbage. Because most people that I've met in this life understand the following. We share the air. We share the water. We share the soil. We do. We share it. You may own a piece of property, but in reality, that soil you're on top of was there for, I don't know, millions of years, and will be there long after you, maybe spread across the world as dust. But the point is, we share that. If you poison the water, if you poison the air, if you poison the soil, you are poisoning your neighbors. Because the government got involved, that reality was removed. We offloaded our ethical choices to somebody else. We need to take our ethical choices back. If we want one chance in heck to survive, we need to take back our moral choices and stop outsourcing them to the government. Because whatever else you might believe, the government isn't good at anything other than making problems worse. Period. Organizations like the EPA and even NGOs that frankly get a lot of sketchy central bank support, even a lot of NGOs want to tell you, if you give us your money, we'll solve the problem. What I'm trying to tell you is they're covering up the problems. They're not fixing them. A lot of these organizations are complete shams and they don't even do anything really. They're just involved in political nonsense. What I am saying is if you want a clean world, a healthy world, You need a free world. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. If you desire a healthy world, a robust ecosystem, there is only one way, liberty. The only way humans respect the world is if they are allowed to live in it, freely to live in it. Dr. Freckles. Think about that, but it's not very complicated, and it's the point I'm trying to make, though. The connection you have with the world is part of what leads you to protect it. Think about all the bozos who go camping and are so good and so strict about packing it out. But then they'll get back to Seattle and they'll participate in every single scheme, every single ethical offload scheme. Oh, I'm recycling. No, dummy. That stuff is being put on ships, and a lot of those Chinese ships are dumping it in the ocean. Wake up. Your recycling is covering up, not fixing. People will go to the woods and be all like, I worry about nature. And then they come back home and they don't put a second thought into any of the dumb things they do because they assume someone else cares. Wrong. There is no one else behind that door that cares. Whether it's labeled EPA or anything else. No one beyond that door cares. They will tell you they care, but they don't. We can come up with whatever rationalizations we want to, but here's something interesting to think on. These same scientists will tell us how smart they are. How smart the orcas are, how intelligent. Well, my guess is they are smart and they are, and you know, they do see the world correctly. And they share the oceans with us. And we have been treating the oceans like sewers, worse than sewers. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there isn't some orca madness. I wouldn't be surprised if there aren't orcas that form up orca armies. Sure, they'll probably be defeated after the orca-human war of 2030 through 2040. Yes, following the 10-year orca-human war, a billion people and almost all the orcas were destroyed. Following the orca-human war, the world was covered in a green slime. There were no more raccoons. The raccoons are gone. The raccoons are gone. We destroyed them. And now they're gone by 2040. I know that I've had a hard time explaining this because I think a lot of libertarians and ANCAPs and voluntarists, they get pulled around on this, like they don't know or understand what the right answer is. But in reality, it's still the non-aggression principle. I'm sorry, if you live in a community and you poison the air, like if you're producing toxic crap and putting it into a cloud, and that cloud floats over the community and folks get cancer, that's called wrong. You don't need a government to tell you that, do you? Are you such a moral lightweight? Are you such a gnat brain when it comes to ethical questions that you don't understand that poisoning your neighbor's air, water is bad, and probably poisoning the soil is bad if you ever intend to eat anything from it? You don't need a government to tell you these things, just like a shark doesn't need a government to tell it to not eat people. If it's eating people, it's either done so by accident or there's just no other food to eat. It needs no government to tell it anything. It's basically trying to survive. humans, allowed to be free, in my opinion, survive in brilliant ways, in good ways, in ways that are connected to the world. It isn't anti-technology, but it's probably in something called equilibrium. And one of the least equilibrium things we have in the world right now is central banking. 100 years of central banking. That's what you should look at. That's what you should think about when you think about damage to the environment. When you think about orcas going orca crazy and killing people, think about central banks. Think about the belief that growth at any cost is a good thing. And then remember, these are the same people that tell you there are too many people. They talk out of both sides of their mouths, brothers and sisters. I'm telling you something very simple. You have a right to own your life. You have a right to own your connection to nature. No one else is your intermediary to nature. No government, no regulation, no lawyer, no nothing. And the only way you or I will ever respect the life on Earth, the only path to respecting our collective ecosystem, is to be free. Prisoners and slaves don't care about the damage they do because their life is damage. You don't spend a lot of time thinking about the state of the stream outside the fence. The very moments, the very times in human history when someone in a position of authority cuts nature off from everyone else, that's usually the beginning of a calamity. So if you want to heal nature, you have to heal the human soul. And if you want to heal the human soul, there is no government solution. The solution is no government. People must be free. It's as critical to us as oxygen. It really is. I remember this country once. I remember hearing about this place. It was called the United States of America. It was called the land of the free and the home of the brave. I would love to find a map. Do any of you guys have a map that can take me home to this magical place called the Land of the Free? And the home of the brave? Right now, we're all gumbo freaks. Right now, we're afraid of our shadows. Right now, we're looking at logs, and we're seeing Prussian cannon. Right now. So does anybody you know a way back there? You have a map. I'd like to find a way back to that place because I'm pretty certain people there don't treat each other like crap. And mostly probably don't treat nature like crap. And probably live as close to an idyllic existence as you can find, if you can find the land of the free and the home of the brave.